91 Right, beginning a visit with Roscoe and Catherine this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 73, the very first time. Channel 1 Right, and beginning a visit with Roscoe and Catherine this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 73, the very first time. Channel 1 Right, and beginning the visit with Roscoe and Catherine this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 73. Channel 1 Right, and beginning a visit with Roscoe and Catherine this Tuesday morning, the 23rd of October, 73, the very first time.
Coffee?
Huh?
Are you going to have a little cup of coffee?
No, thank you. I just had some.
Well, Catherine said you might.
I know, but I don't drink coffee after breakfast.
Oh.
Until dinner.
Well, this is dinner.
No.
Well, I'll tell you, you'll have to have some of Fanny's, a little bit of Fanny's cheese bread that she sent down here. Just
yeah.
A taste so that you can, I can tell her that you
tasted it.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll take a half a cup of coffee.
All right. I thought maybe you might.
That's a papaya.
That's an avocado.
Avocado, yeah.
I know. I grow papayas, and then I get papayas and avocados.
Do you grow mangoes at all?
No.
I love mangoes. Oh, do I love mangoes?
Does Emma love mangoes?
Oh.
But they are an awful gamble to buy.
I know it. I know it.
She loves all kinds of melons.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Emma, I'll buy any that you pick out, but I will not take the responsibility of picking out a melon. So that's that. All right, Roscoe said,
all right, he'll have a half a cup.
I just had breakfast. I can't eat a very big piece.
Oh, no, just the taste.
Just a taste. Jeffrey
of course you'll take a piece.
As Jeffrey says about a cocktail, just the taste.
Oh,
just a taste, Parker.
Yes, we like light, do we?
Well, this is sort of dark over here.
I just kept these down because when I sit over here, I'm looking right at the light over there.
I just have to look at you because I didn't know I'd ever
see you. Oh, I know. Oldest man you've seen in a long time.
Oh, so harsh. You are not the youngest.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know how you all both do it.
Do what?
But both of you look just like you're ready to go out on a nature walk or something.
Now listen,
go out fishing.
Don't put it on too thick.
I don't see how in the world you do it.
Some people just lie and lie and lie, don't they?
Yeah. Well, you're the one that does
don't
it.
Don't even blush about it.
Yeah, you're the one that does it. Telling me, Faye, telling me that fishing didn't suit him because he had to stand up and his knees were bothering him.
Yeah.
Now just look at him.
Who's lying? I sat down to dinner last night. Before I got through with my dinner, my right knee was bothering me considerably. I had to stand on it a little. Then I have to sit down. I
remember in Knoxville when you couldn't sit through
the meal. This won't work right, guy.
I don't think it was arthritis, but it was some kind of leg trouble.
Let me tell you.
And don't you know Papu never could either.
You know,
if I stand up, it hurts. If I sit down, it hurts. Where'd you get your little drinking glass?
I drink that all the time.
I bet you that coffee's too strong.
Well, hopefully for Roscoe.
I have no recollection of my former self.
Is that intentional?
Well, I've really never been interested in myself.
Oh, I hope you haven't failed.
Well, I should have been.
Don't find yourself interesting?
Well, I've never thought so. But
you ought to look yourself over occasionally.
I should.
Yeah. See what you're like.
Yeah, but I just never paid much attention to myself.
Well, I wouldn't do any good because you wouldn't change. So you
I want you to have a taste of that.
He isn't changing for himself or anybody else.
Where's your coffee, guys? You don't get any?
I got some right here.
Now, this is what you call cheese bread.
This is some of Fanny's fine new bread, and I want your taste of it.
Got tasted, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I want a little. Oh, you've toasted it.
Well, yes.
I find I haven't drank much water. It makes my stomach sour.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I take a little juice or something with it.
To keep it warm. Guy says.
Mine gets sour easy enough.
We don't have
it. Is that right?
I have deep things all the time to keep it from getting too sour.
Well, I never had water make my stomach sour, sort of.
But food.
Well, I drink a lot of water, but it doesn't.
It's the water.
It isn't quite enough.
No.
I usually have some lemon juice before breakfast in the morning. That helps.
Starts out the day that way.
Oh.
Then have orange juice for breakfast.
Well,
that helps.
Yeah. Well, I see it. I start this as soon as I get up in the morning.
I do too, but I put lemon juice in it first. That makes it better.
Well, you see, that's my trouble. I haven't had a chance to talk with you.
I know. You just don't know anything, do you?
He's no MD.
But he knows what works.
For him.
Well, that,
for him.
Find,
yeah.
I think
that's
if you
ordinarily,
find that
it all work for everybody.
And a glass of water and drink it before breakfast,
this
hot as
cool
you can drink it. That it will help.
Oh, I just can't stand that hot stuff.
You can't stand that hot stuff.
I can drink it cold.
You can drink it hot, too.
Maybe his liver works better than yours.
You can do anything you decide you're going to do.
I don't do it from the liver. I do it from the kidneys.
For your teeth.
Kidneys.
Well, that's all right. It doesn't matter if that's what you're doing it for.
The hot water would be better for my kidneys, too?
Would hot water be better?
No.
Oh.
No,
doesn't make any
difference.
Just so it's liquid.
Guy,
you have permission.
Dr. Kibler says, just so it's liquid.
Cold.
Just so it's liquid and not milk. I drink great quantities of milk. My trouble's not with my kidneys.
You drink quantities of milk?
Oh, yeah.
Faye, you didn't know that.
No, I didn't know it. I really didn't. I guess I thought you just drank coffee and tea.
No, you drink a lot of milk.
Milk, liquor, wine.
Oh.
Anything that's good.
What's the milk for?
What's
the like it.
What I drink milk for?
You
so I like it.
Not medicinal purposes.
Well, I'll be damned. Just because you like it.
Just because I like it, yeah.
And you get away with it.
I'm old enough to do what I please.
You don't have to ask your mama.
Roger, can you remember?
These guys that think milk is bad for you are crazy.
I think so.
Now, if you have kidney stones, that's different. I don't have kidney stones, thank God.
Now.
Yeah. So I drink milk.
Well, they don't drink milk because it's got butterfat in it.
I don't care. Doesn't bother me.
Doesn't bother you?
No. I like butterfat. I even like butter.
Really? Really?
Mm-hmm. I eat it.
Well, you see, I don't know any of these things,
mm-hmm.
Catherine. You see, I'm ignorant in so many ways.
We eat Oleo.
So do we.
What I know is very limited, and mostly what I know is really not correct.
Well, Guy, what's correct for one person isn't always correct for everybody.
No, what fits for one person doesn't fit another necessarily.
No,
but the general principle.
What is it? Equitable Life says in its ad on the TV, everyone is different or something of that sort.
Yes.
Well, that's true. That's true of your makeup and diet too. I've discovered.
Yes.
And I've learned mine by trial and error. Now, as far as I can tell, milk
yeah.
doesn't bother me. It does me good. I enjoy. I love it.
And then you don't go around feeling bulky like you got like a cow with a hay stomach.
No.
You get your nourishment without.
He doesn't look like all these women either. Broad beard.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were so many fat people in the world.
I do all the things I
As you see
to
when
do.
You travel.
There are things.
Some things I ought not to do. I'm careful not to. But, I I have no faith in these guys who think that milk and eggs are bad for you. I think they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, I admit you can have too much of either one, but when I order milk at lunch, we can stop for a lunch, light luncheon. Catherine gets a small glass, I get a big glass.
Yeah.
At home, I drink two glasses. I drink about a pint, almost a pint for lunch.
Oh, really?
That costs now.
She complains. But
I don't complain. Now, that's no fair. I don't complain.
Yeah, then I drink it again.
Well, they don't tell you they've gone.
Then I drink
you
it
just
again.
Wait till
drink
you
it
get your bill and find it. It's got 3 cents, 5 cents.
If I don't drink wine, I drink milk or tomato juice. Sometimes I drink all three. I like to drink. I like liquid.
Roscoe, have another one of Fanny's.
No, thanks. I better not. I just had breakfast. Thank you. They're very good.
Well, sure,
you tell Fanny I said they're good.
All right.
You tell me about Mamu.
He's fine.
Still
fine.
Running around.
Still running around.
Well, I heard it, Frank.
Misbehaving as usual.
Yeah, misbehaving as usual.
But she has more fun down here than she does anywhere else, don't you, Faye?
Yeah. She has
when
more.
She comes down here, she knows everything that goes on. She wants to know what every cow is doing.
That's right.
And she goes out and sees.
That's right.
She really does.
Yeah.
Does she make you behave?
Anybody yes. come in and talk, she comes in and talks with us.
Yeah. Does she make you behave?
Pretty much.
She tries to, I guess. She does the best she can.
She likes what Guy does. She really does. And she likes the people that come by
she
and talk. There's
people.
Something going on.
Mm-hmm. You see, Shirley comes over here and sits down here and we talk for an hour or two
on
the cow.
She likes people.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And she likes to talk about something.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you see, the circles, they don't quite do that. She goes, you know, she goes to circles too.
Yeah.
She said, she was real cute. She said, you know, the people that come by to see me, like she mentioned several, they're so busy and they're in such a hurry, they only stay 5 minutes and they come by and hug me and say, Mamu, I'm glad to see you. Goodbye.
Oh.
But they come over here and we sit down and talk for 2 or 3 hours.
I asked the boy down there, I thought I'd passed your place and then I recognized this field over here and I thought that I didn't see the road from where I was. Where I could turn off.
Camouflage.
So I asked the color boy down there.
You,
he said, there's Mrs. Miles right behind you now.
Guy, you used to have a sign, Miles Ranch.
Yeah, I rusted out.
Oh, well, you.
Why don't you
if
paint
you want to have visitors, you better get them unrusted. Get some new.
Well, we all went all the way down to the road and came out to Evanston and came in this way.
I got a sign right here that I have put up.
Well, good.
This is
an
Astor. I've
had it over there 6 months.
Astor.
Miles Ranch.
Oh.
Why don't you
put
it up?
And I didn't realize it was packed in. It was.
I told that's a question that needs no answer.
I know the answer.
I'm just too damn trifling.
I know that. As I would say, a little simpler, not have to pronounce such a long word, too damn lazy.
I don't know why it is. There's many essential things that I never get around to.
I know. I've been threatening to get myself a job so I'd have more leisure. But,
yeah.
If I had a job, I think I'd have some leisure. Since I have no job, I never have any.
Roscoe, you just keep busy with that house all the time.
No.
No, honey. Not in the house.
I mean
outside.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
I keep busy around the yard, and it looks like hell.
What do you have to do around the yard?
Grow
well,
vegetables.
There are weeds that come up and grow down there. And
in the sand?
Huh? In the sand. Oh, it produces wonderful weeds. Won't produce much else, but it produces wonderful weeds. The trees grow, and they have to be trimmed. The hedge grows. It has to be trimmed. And now and then, I have to catch a fish.
Well, that takes you out of the yard.
That's the one thing that I let the house and the yard go for. I go fishing.
Yeah.
When I have to go fishing, I have to go fishing.
You've learned this.
Well, do you just fish when you have an urge, or are you more methodical?
Whenever I have the urge all the time. I could just fish every day if I had the energy to do it. In fact, I used to when I didn't have anything else to do. when I was younger and could do it, and we'd come down here to fish. I'd fish morning, and I'd go back after lunch, fish all afternoon.
And
so did Catherine most of the time.
What
about I can't do it anymore, guy. The old boys are getting older than they were.
Let me tell you. Ennis, where was that?
Ennis.
We were sitting in his office, and he had a letter from you. And he's going to show it to me, but he never did. I mean, he just misplaced it, and then he misplaced me. it's a big place.
He couldn't get you and the letter together.
That's right. And
he looks badly.
But anyhow, we got to talking, and it got into fishing, and I said, just how long has this been going on? Well, he thought at that time about the time that you came from Knoxville up there, and he was still up there in East Tennessee then.
Yeah.
He was principal of school.
That's right.
And his daddy was the minister.
That's right.
And you come up there in an old broken down car.
Yeah. The only kind I had.
Yeah. And you all.
We left my old car for his daddy, and he took his daddy's car and went off fishing.
Yeah.
And that was just the first fishing.
And he was a little delicate about asking you if he felt a little bit reserved about asking you if you just use his daddy's car.
He got over that pretty fast.
And he said you just ran back and laughed, and you had leggings on.
Roscoe.
He was right circumstantial.
I didn't remember that.
I had a good time up there.
But I didn't realize that was Ernest's first fishing.
That's the first time we fished
first.
Together, and I don't know how much he had fished before, but
he ain't much of a fisherman. But he seems
he's not as good a fisherman as he ought to be.
He loves it, and he's perfectly happy. And
loves
he
it.
Loves
as long
the
as
people.
He's fishing, he's happy. He doesn't care whether he catches anything or not.
He don't care.
No, but that seems to worry.
There's something to be said for that, of course. But I like to get a bite now, and I like to see my float go down occasionally.
You like to have something on the table, too.
I love fish.
One time when he was down at the beach fishing guy, nobody was catching much on the pier except Roscoe and one other man, so they all took up sides. And when Roscoe...
Had cheering sections.
Had cheering sections. When Roscoe brought in the fish, his cheerleaders would say, "Our man caught one." Our man... Then the other man would catch one, and the cheer would go up. But I've always wished that I had been there and seen that. It must have been lots of fun.
We had a good time. Everybody had a good time. Everybody stopped fishing and watched the other man and me catch fish. There were two certain places out there. You could cast out, and pretty soon you'd get a strike.
Same thing?
You wouldn't strike anywhere else.
Oh.
That's sometimes true.
And that's just where you all were sitting.
And I was where I could reach one of them. The other man was where he could reach one of them.
Yeah.
And we caught all the fish. I think we caught 9 or 10 apiece. Nobody else caught anything.
And the rest of them just sitting there watching you.
The rest of them were out
no,
there.
No, we're
sitting.
There's no place to sit, guy.
And there he goes. You see the float go down. There he goes. He got one. Our man's got one. The other man got one.
Ernest came back and told the story. I don't
good,
know that Roscoe would have
story,
told it.
You know,
he just loved it.
He tells one well.
He does.
Yeah.
Well, you see, I've never heard him talk much.
He told one last night that I'd heard before, but it's a good story.
Oh, just anymore. Good.
The,
she was just
I,
like
I,
her old
I can't
dad.
Hear, Captain. Let me hear this, and then I'll...
Well,
Eddie,
he was telling one last night that I had heard him tell before. It's an interesting story, though, about the new preacher.
Yeah.
I didn't
went up to this country church to preach.
You know, now that's a curious thing. You see, whenever anybody... That's the way it always used to be. Whenever anybody even starts to tell a story, you see, you start being amused. Didn't you hear me laugh?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, yes, you did, to make him happy.
I
go
did
on
not.
The story.
Well, anyway, you're interrupting my story.
I just love
it. Well, I hear so few.
Well, you won't hear this if you don't keep quiet. He went out to this country church to preach. When he came in the back door behind the pulpit, found a big dog sitting up in the pulpit. Well, he didn't think much of that, and he thought he might pray a disturbance during service. So he took his foot and edged him along on the floor a little bit till he got him by the door, and he opened the door and pushed him out. When he stood up behind the lectern, he recognized out in the audience a big husky fella that was mad. He could just tell he was mad by looking at him. He said, "Oh, that was his dog. And I've made a mistake." But anyway, he had a hard time preaching because he could look at this man sitting out there mad. And so when the service was over, he was shaking hands and he came to this man. And he said, "I'm sorry." The man said, "Yes, that was my dog." Pushed out the back door. "I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I want to apologize for it." "No, I don't apologize." "Well," he said, I want to apologize because I shouldn't have done it. It was wrong." "No," he said, "you don't need to apologize because I set great store with that dog. He's a very fine dog. And I wouldn't have had him hear that sermon for $50.
That's the only story he told last night.
That's hard to believe.
He's in constant pain, Annabelle said.
Yeah.
He looked badly.
Well.
And he didn't want to stay late.
Now, just to show you, right?
Of course, that was for us. So we
got to go ahead now. What you're going to say? I tell Faye if you don't want to tell me.
You're talking about.
What was it she was telling you, Faye?
She's telling me about Betty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Betty looked fine.
Yeah.
And has her old pep and her old interest.
Don't tell me.
She's a remarkable girl, I think.
She's,
She's just as peppy as she always was.
Good Lord.
And she has learned to handle herself so well.
Or a crutch now. She walked into the room when I was waiting for her without a stick or a crutch.
Well, I haven't seen that.
She walked into the room where I was waiting last night. I went over and picked her up. Without a stick or a crutch, and she took.
You mean that was at home?
That was at home.
I said.
Of course, she could touch the wall if she needed to. I took my arm, came down the steps, and got in the car. I didn't have a stick or a crutch. Took my arm and got to the motor court, and said, "Well, let's walk down a little. I need to walk." So we walked down halfway to our room.
I suppose Harry used to make her take walks.
And,
with him holding.
Went in, and she handles herself very well, and she's not depressed, so far as I can tell.
No. Mm-hmm. The last time, 2 years ago, she was weak.
Last time, she was very much down in the dumps. This was her second one that she'd lost in a row, you see.
And
she'd had this trouble, and they had not got adjusted, but she has now, I think.
Anyway, she's taking
interest. She's more interested in things.
Yeah.
I admire the girl tremendously.
Yes, I do too. Yes.
I did.
She'd been over to Cedar Key, and I thought of you all. We spent a day on Cedar Key. We got there about 11 o'clock. We drove, there was a great deal of space, but we went over it several times trying to find a place we wanted to spend the night. This was his birthday.
Oh.
Tell Faye about your encounter.
No, I told you about the motel.
No, you didn't.
I don't think so. You told it last night.
At any rate, we decided we'd stay over, and I went over to the...
You said they'd sold it, and the new one wasn't... No.
That's right.
That's the rest.
New manager, the food has deteriorated.
They have a new manager, and it's not as good as it used to be. But I looked at a room. Well, the rooms up... bedrooms are all upstairs. And those stairs are not easy for crippled people, including me. And I didn't think Catherine could do very well making up and down the stairs, so we looked around and found a little motor court across the street.
You've been over there lately.
And I went in and asked if they had a room on the first floor. Yes. We had one with a double bed and a folding bed. And I said, well, I'll take that. And she got out her book for me to register. And said, well, this is October 17th. I said, yes, my birthday. Your birthday? Mm-hmm. How old are you? I said, I'm 83 today. And I said, don't you think I would have a discount?
That isn't like Roscoe, you know. That just amazed me.
I was joking, of course. And she called back to her husband, who was in the next room, and said, here's a gentleman who's 83 years old today. He thinks he ought to have a discount. What do you think? Yes, he said, I think so, too. And he came out and said, take $5 off the price.
I think that's lovely.
He gave me a receipt for the price was $15. Gave me a receipt for $10 was written on it. Happy birthday.
That sort of straightens out the world for you, doesn't it?
Well, we then had a very
That was my birthday present.
After having eaten lunch somewhere else and seeing the dinner, I didn't think we would enjoy it very much, so I thought I'd make a little diversion. It was a very interesting looking couple right next table with two nice boys, little boys. Wouldn't you say they were about 4 and 6?
I would think about four or six, something like that.
I just got in conversation with them.
Good.
We needed a little diversion, and we found him charming.
That's yours or mine?
He's oceanographer. Oceanographer. And had most interesting experiences. So when he couldn't get champagne, which we usually have for a birthday or celebration, but he got a very good wine, but he couldn't get less than a big bottle. And we couldn't drink it, you know. And I thought finally came to me, let's offer it to the young couple. So they pulled their chairs over and brought their martini glasses, and Roscoe filled them up with Rhine wine, and we had a really nice visit with them. So that helped to make a birthday celebration.
Yeah.
I should say.
Quite exciting.
Yeah. Interesting little children they were.
Now that's the thing. That's the reason I don't travel, because I never fall in with people like that.
Let fool you say anything more. Mrs. Baird said her boys, after she got 70, would travel, and she talked to anybody that came along, and the boys got after her. And she said, when you're 70 years old, you're old enough to talk to anybody you want to. So I took that as a privilege.
I'll talk to them. They won't talk to me.
Or you don't listen to them.
You don't ask the right questions.
These two little boys.
I got the wrong attitude.
They had a little money, and they were buying some of the local postcards with pelicans and things on them. And then they'd sit down and reproduce them.
Oh.
Pretty well, too. Uh-huh. They could draw a pretty good pelican. That was interesting.
But one of the interesting experiences, this young man, he'd been on a ship that went out for that work 7 months.
Little girl next
time.
Door draws things, and she's good. She started coloring. Now she's getting so she draws some of her own things.
Now, Faye would like to hear the story, and then you need to tell any more. That we got at the table about the politics. I think you told Guy.
No. The what?
The politics, the North Carolina, North Carolina.
No, I don't need to hear it again.
You liked it, so do
North
I.
North Carolina has.
I don't mind repeats.
North Carolina has a young Republican governor.
I can see things in them I didn't see at first.
North Carolina has a young Republican governor. First one they've had since right after the Civil War. And we stopped at a Holiday Inn down the highway and
up the road.
Went in for lunch. And I saw these headlines about Nixon's spasms, which had not been in the Atlanta paper, which was an early edition. That I had bought, so I got one of those and had it at the table. And a man came by and hesitated and looked at it. And I said, well, Nixon's having the president's blowing his top again. He said, yes. And I'm reminded of an experience I had last summer up in western North Carolina. Speaking of politics, and I was talking to a mountaineer up there, this and that, and his ideas about things, and finally I asked him what his politics was. And well, he said, I'll tell you a story.
This is a story within a story.
Yeah.
Tell you a story. He said, we had a young chap, running for governor of North Carolina. He was elected to, by the way. He was up here shaking hands with everybody and working up votes and so on. Ran across a little boy, basket on his arm with a couple of puppies in it. So he made up with the little boy, which was good politics, of course, and talking to him. Finally, he said, those puppies, he said, are they Democrats or Republicans? Oh, he said, they're Republicans. So he went around shaking hands. Next day, he ran the same little boy with the same basket and the same two puppies. And he started talking to him again. And of course, as the country people do, the small town people, they gathered around to see what the big man was talking about. So after he got got a little audience around, he repeated his question to the boy. And he said, those puppies, are they Democrats or Republicans? They're Democrats, he said. What's that? The Democrats. Well, you told me yesterday they're Republicans. Yes, he said, but their eyes weren't open yesterday.
You never would have spoken to the man. I did. You never would have spoken to the man going by the table over to the buffet, but I did. And that's what I got.
Did you know she did things like that?
Well, I can imagine it.
She's always talking to strangers and sticking her head in private doors and all that sort of thing.
I didn't
expect
it.
Not at all.
I didn't know it.
That just reverses my whole view of you. I thought you were one of the snootiest damn people I ever saw. The only people you talk to are the ones you've known for 50 years.
You go to the devil.
Now, wait,
you go sit on tax. Roscoe, you never thought that.
No, I never did.
Where'd I get that?
I never did.
You just made it up, because that's the way you wanted me to be.
Huh?
You want water?
I want water, yeah.
Okay, let me get
some.
I had more interesting experiences in London, Guy. I talked to everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to tell you what after. I want Faye to hear this story.
She can hear.
We were at a play. Let me see. That was A Journey with Father.
Journey Around My Father.
Journey Around My Father.
You like it this way or cold?
This is fine.
Well, there's some bowls.
I can give you real cold.
This is fine.
Bring it out in case we want it.
No, I don't want it.
I may want it.
Why don't you get up and get it?
Well, I got a sleeve. Was that at the theater?
At the theater, Roscoe. We had already bought the tickets before he realized that he couldn't hear enough to get any pleasure out of a play.
Yeah.
So, but we did.
Well, he won't listen to me because I know how to hear. I can tell him how, but he won't listen to me.
All right. So part of the, there was one scene in which the father was blind. It was Michael Redgrave.
Uh-huh. Michael Redgrave was acting the part of the blind father.
Blind father.
Did it perfectly.
And he was wonderful. He really was. Roscoe got enough out of the acting, he said, to recompense him for sitting there. But anything, he was very fine. But the father was a lover of gardening and growing things, just like Roscoe. And one scene, the boy brings in a lot of seedlings in boxes. And sits down, he's talking to his father, and he tells his father, said, how many earwigs did you find? And he told him how many, I've forgotten how many there were. So I waited until after the scene was over. And, of course, to make Roscoe hear me, everybody around heard, too. And I said to it, "What is an earwig?" Well, in North Carolina, it's a bug that gets in your ear and causes trouble. Well, I said, "That had nothing to do with this, and I'm disappointed in you, because I want to know what an earwig is." Well, I didn't think any more about it, but as we left, I asked the usher where the ladies' room was, and she said, "Right on up here on your way out." And I felt an arm tuck under mine, and this nice voice said, "I'm going that way. I'll show you, and I'll tell you on the way what an earwig is." She had sat right in front of me.
So she found ladies' room and found out what an earwig is.
Well, you see, that's one of the reasons we have such admiration for Mamo. You see, she gets on a bus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Talks to everybody on it.
Yeah. They know her and she knows them.
Oh, I see.
All about them. And then when she gets home, she tells you.
Yeah. Well, I had some very interesting experiences. I couldn't walk. You see, I couldn't take a bus.
Meanest trick she ever did, though, once. We got on a train.
On
one of the cannons at Ely. was on, and he was trying to read proof on an article, and she talked to him all the way so he couldn't read any proof.
Well, I found out that he had a friend in California that we'd met. I had a very interesting time.
We talked about his California friends we'd met.
Yeah, so forth and so
on. And
so oh,
on.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you travel, get something out of it, guys.
Well, my view,
learn something.
My view of the English is that they would put away the proofreading any day in order to get talk a little. They're great talkers. Am I wrong?
English?
Yes.
I don't think
no, they're
so.
Not too talkative. Some of them are, but no.
I don't think so.
You think
not for strangers,
wrong.
I don't think. So. Well, he was very interesting. He was.
Oh,
he was interested in natural science.
Yeah.
He'd written a book on science and religion, I believe, or some aspect of it. He was one of the Queen's chaplains.
Yeah.
It was the first Queen Elizabeth. Not the first one, but the present Queen's mother. He was one of her chaplains.
Didn't one of you
very
all...
Very nice, very lovely person.
Oh, yeah, I had a lovely time. Didn't one of you ask how Minnie Kate and the Parkers got together on the trip?
Yeah.
Well, it's a funny story. I won't give the background.
Give it all.
Betty Hamer, you
see,
lost her husband.
Yes.
And she kind of clung to Roscoe because he was Phil's oldest friend living. So Roscoe couldn't talk to her over the telephone. I didn't have anything to say to Betty in the letters, so every so often I'd call her to see how she was getting along. I could chatter, but I somehow never could write her a letter. So I, just before we left on this trip, I thought, well, now Betty goes to London every summer for the Library of Congress. Maybe she'll be there when we are, and it'll be nice for Roscoe and Betty and so forth. So I called her and told her about our trip, our date. Well, she came in about 3 or 4 days after we got there, so we were there the week together. But she immediately told Minnie Kate. I hadn't told Minnie Kate because I didn't know whether I wanted her or not. But she was, so Minnie Kate called that same evening that she got the letter in the morning and asked if we minded her being there, and we didn't, and she added a great deal to our pleasure. She was more interesting than I've ever known her. She was perfectly stunning looking with that white hair. And she really added, we checked on each other. We weren't in the same hotel, but we checked on each other every day. And
she came out to our apartment for cocktails.
Yeah. And we had many of our dinners together. But
out of our good dining room at the hotel where she was staying, we ate there a number of times.
Yeah. Well, how did we ever get up to to Bede's old country up there?
York?
York? Past York, up there at the Abbey.
How did we get up there?
How did we ever happen to go up there, Roscoe?
For the plays.
We went up for the York plays.
No, up at to Whitby.
Oh,
you know, when we took
I wanted to go, and I think Minnie Kate wanted to go.
The rest of you just went.
The rest of you decided to come along, I think.
Well, that's the most fantastic thing I ever saw. You can't imagine that.
Didn't you enjoy that trip?
Oh, yes.
Gorgeous, I thought. Didn't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember saying
that.
Well,
that's why Minnie Kate has told herself she liked to travel with us.
Uh-huh.
Because Roscoe's always finding something interesting to do.
Whitby is a old institution, you know.
It's up there at the top of that
very top of the moor.
Promontory.
Yeah.
Out there in the North Sea, and it's never summer there.
No, there's much summer there.
I want to tell you something.
All right, then I'm going to the bathroom.
Well, you go ahead.
No, I've got to hear this. I might miss something.
Ahead.
I won't do it.
Yeah, well, it's going to take me a few minutes.
I'm waiting.
No, we're waiting to go to the bathroom.
I'd rather go later.
Okay. I want to tell you a little bit of these things I do, Roscoe.
Yeah.
Now, you take what we do now. I can use it. I know how to use it. Well, you'd say, oh, what in the hell have we talked about?
Yeah,
well,
that's wonderful.
We haven't quite got into solid ground. We ought to stop up that Whitby and look around a little bit, you see?
Yeah.
It ought to be a little bit more circumstantial than what it is.
Yeah.
But that's as far as I go. I don't analyze anybody, and I don't tell any private information. Nothing is private. I use nothing whatever, all right? The department backs me up. The head of the department backs me up. Ward is associate head, and he helps me all the time. I've had dozens of people out here working with me, and none of them have ever objected to anything that goes on. They're fascinated by it. It gives them an insight into people that they have never had before. And it is nothing, it's just a commonplace. If you work at it, if you look at it, you can take like Miss Daisy down there. I told you about her. She's literate, and she's one of the finest talkers we've ever had. Now Miss Bessie next door had a rather significant career. Both of them, she started poor, you see. Both of them were, one of them was a Georgia nigger, and the other was
a North Carolina
nigger. Well, I work with anybody. I don't work with the same people. You see, I don't get cornered in any one thing. You say I work with one literate person, well, the next one be learned. I don't want to get cornered.
On the same subject?
On their own subjects.
I see.
Now, I don't want to get into this too much, but now you take this. This is Louis Nealon. He's an old forestry man. He's your same age right now. He's born 1891.
But I was born 1890.
Well, you're smarter than he is. Well, you see, he comes out here, and we get going, and he'll tell us anything we ought to know, except he doesn't know how to get into his experience, and we have learned how. And we enable him to say things that he couldn't say. And what he's done here, this little chapter is the most fascinating thing, one of the most fascinating things I ever got into. And we're going to publish it. Louis Nealon in the West. You see, he was out West until his 19th year. For about 3 years before he left, their family was bankrupt. They had a little fruit farm. And the gold dredgers came in and paid more for the water than they could pay. And there's 28 fruit farmers there, and they all dried up. Well, his daddy said to him he'd have to go out and just do the best he could. Well, he worked on a ranch, custom haymaking, for a while. He says the hardest work he ever did. Well, that ain't interesting. But we eventually got him to relating all those experiences he had and the people he met, you see. And it's just everyday information. And then he was a lumberjack up in the High Sierras, cutting them logs up so high, you see. That's not right. The thing of it is, he did that just at the time he was becoming an adult, and the adversity put him out on his own, where he had to look at what he was doing. If he'd been a boy and had had plenty of everything at home, he wouldn't have done it. He'd just taken the money and gone home, or else he wouldn't have done it. You see, that is something. What I found, one of the things I found is that people grow up on the farm or anywhere, and they don't know one damn thing about it. Somehow or other, they've got to relive it as an adult, where they have to look at it before they know what they live through, you see. Well, we pick up a lot of little things like that. Well, now, we've got Louis Nealon, and we've got 150 pages on him. All of it. Now, this part right here, I just had it Xerox yesterday, just to get a few extra copies to work with. Debbie went in and talked to Ms. Nealon. Well, I don't think she's as interesting as he is, but she is extremely interesting. She lived in New York, and he was down here clearing the land. They had to, that's the reason they ran him out of California, and they came to Florida and was on another frontier. And she was, you see, she was way up in the world.
She's a Barnard graduate.
She was a Barnard graduate. And here he took a 2-year course in agriculture. That's all he had.
Are you white or
colored? White. He's a farmer.
Oh, very. They're learned.
Lovely people.
Oh, yeah, lovely people. I don't work with illiterate people. Except
you go
just,
and work with what?
Illiterate.
Just by, just happen to is all.
Oh.
You'd have had a wonderful time having the experiences I used to have hearing people talk those things when I was a boy.
Yes.
In the country, in the backwoods country.
That's right. But
my father was one of the few people who had gone to school a little, because he grew up during the Civil War. And when he was old enough to earn a little money, he went to school for a while.
Yeah.
And there were two or three other people in the community, around about, and they used to come in on Sunday afternoons, I'd sit around fascinated,
yeah,
listening
That's
to these
right.
people telling their experiences and
yeah,
arguing about this and that, politics, religion,
yeah,
farming.
Yeah. Well, now my basic statement is, you see, that in that culture, they lived within their experience,
sure,
and they had faculties.
We all do.
And they had faculties by which
we all do.
They
we
could report
to.
It. If we all did, I wouldn't be doing this.
We all do.
You don't have much anymore.
We don't have much experience, or we don't recognize we're having it, but we live with it.
No, we don't. We live with it.
You
media.
Go on and get ready.
One of the things I think that mother had to, mother has finally learned that this is really interesting, you know, even my mother. And one of the first things that she has learned when she sits and listens to Daisy talk is that when she talks about something that happened to her when she was young, it's not old-timey. That mother has finally thought, she used to say, I don't like to think about old-timey things. And we said, well, mother, when you were 16 is just as much part of your life,
yeah,
as when you're almost,
sure,
90.
Sure, sure.
And
if you
deny your great-grandchildren this richness of when you were 8 or 16 or 20 or whenever it was, then they only see a little part of your life.
The least interesting.
The least interesting, actually, right now, is the least interesting. And you know, she's gotten to where she talks.
she talked
she
about
reminisces.
Anything. It's not reminiscing so much as is this. She'll just say, well, now I know about that, you know, for instance, this butter mold. She was saying, well, I had a butter mold, and then she told us all about the butter molds that she had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't a matter of remembering. It's just she seemingly, the butter mold was right there in front of her.
What I have found, Roscoe, now, you see, I don't know how to say it.
Go ahead, Pappy.
Is all of this stuff comes out, but it's not the memory that does it.
No, it's...
I don't know what it is.
It's recall.
Something or other.
The psychologist
it's something that you've lived,
you've
and
lived
then you get
and,
into it and relive it.
And it's what the psychologists call recall. This reminds me, they'll say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they may recall something. For example, my father or somebody would talk about... selling something for a certain price.
Yeah.
It's something that was out of the way, you know. Oh, he said, I remember hearing him say one time, that reminds me, when I was 9 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
My father was in the army.
Yeah.
During the Civil War. I found a lot of chestnuts in a piece of wood near where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked a pack of them. And I walked 9 miles, I think it was, to the nearest town.
Mm-hmm.
And sold them. I've forgotten how much he got for them. And then I walked back and gave the money to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any money, of course. They had no way of getting any money.
That's right.
My grandfather was the only earner in the family. He was a farm superintendent for a big plantation. At that time, had one of his own later and lost him. But they had nothing except what they could earn and grow in the garden and things like that. But that's what happened. I grew up on that.
Yes, that's right. Now the only thing I do that's different is I take the scholarly side of it, and I can make it more sustained.
Yes.
But you see, that's not a part of the culture. I mean, you see, I hear Miss Daisy report on things that no one else has ever heard, for the simple reason that I can hold it open for her.
They talk to you.
They talk to me. They talk to a lot of people. It's all public. It's not in private, you see.
Oh.
With them, that's another thing. You see, with your pappy or your grandfather, nothing was private.
No.
Everything that happened was just
everything,
public.
Everybody knew everything everybody did in the community, practically.
Yes. Well, the first thing people will tell you.
And they told you about it.
They'll tell you about it. And you didn't have to ask them. This thing of question and answer is a part of a school system.
Sometimes.
And questions are as little information.
That's the old scholastic tradition still surviving.
You suppose? You suppose? You suppose?
Yeah. Question and answer. Catechism.
Yeah. Well, you see, the way we talk outside the school system.
We don't talk that way.
We don't even...
We do ask questions sometimes, but
we
ask them in a little different way.
They're seldom. And the question actually makes it less interesting because it pins you down.
Yeah.
And actually, if you want to get into the subject, you know, you just sidle into it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say it, but...
I'll tell you, man, who was an educated man, you would have enjoyed knowing and working with. That was old Professor Horace Williams, who was professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina. He was... He grew up on a farm in eastern North Carolina.
They all did, I guess.
He walked 70 miles, it was, I think, from that farm to Chapel Hill when he entered the university with his little possessions on his back.
Yeah.
And he kept that simplicity. even though he was a very profound thinker.
Yes.
And he studied Plato.
Yes.
And Socrates.
Yes.
And
yes.
And he was the most adept user of the Socratic system of questioning and answering I've ever seen.
Yes.
And yet he did it all on that same basis that you find among the people who discuss things in simple life.
Yeah.
That his object was, of course, to get people to think.
Yes.
He seldom expressed an opinion, but he wanted somebody else's opinion. His object was to draw people out.
Well,
and he used that very successfully in his logic, which was his most famous course.
Yeah.
Everybody with any intellectual pretensions took.
Yeah.
In the university. Not all of them passed, by the way. But I was very proud of it. That was the nearest I came to reaching distinction was in old man Horace's logic.
Oh, really?
I met him on the library steps the day after examination. He stopped me. Said, Mr. Parker, you enjoyed your logic course, didn't you? I said, yes, sir, I did, Professor. I enjoyed it very much. I knew you did when I read your paper, he said. I thought for a long time I had to have to give you an A, but I finally gave you a B+. Well, I discovered that during 20-odd years he'd been giving this course, he had given 3 A's. So I was a man of distinction. And he even considered you.
He even considered it.
Yeah. But he and I always got along very nicely.
Yeah.
Now, he was a curious combination of that simple country life and a learned man.
Yeah.
He somehow put the two together so that they fused.
Yeah.
You don't see that often. Most of us, you see, when we begin to learn, we begin to get bookish.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
It always on a simple basis.
Yeah. you see, at the up there now, I think the whole academic side, the part that I know, you see. They'll never write a book on a living human being. It's always books that they use.
Sure. I know.
It's a literary culture.
Yeah.
And then you see they lose interest in the living human beings. They've got no approach for them.
I know. We get mired down in.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not one of those who is contemptuous of books. After all, they contain the distilled experience of the world, if you know how to get at it. And they're very valuable things. Libraries are valuable things. Like dictionaries, if you don't depend on them too much. Yeah, but sometimes we depend on them too much.
Yeah.
It's good to get, I think, sort of thing you're doing to get down to basics in life. I do it quite a lot on the fishing trip.
Yes.
That's where I get my education now.
Yeah.
Of course, as a boy, I used to sit around and hear the adults talk. So
well,
people like to come and talk with my father. He was an intelligent man, not an educated man.
I like that too.
Intelligent man, and they like to come talk with him.
Yeah.
And he did things for them. He wrote their wills. He wrote their deeds into their lands, and he did all those things for them. He wrote letters for them if they couldn't write, and all that sort of thing.
Now that's your pappy.
Yeah.
Well, you. you got a lot from him then.
Huh?
You got a lot from your father.
Oh, yes. Sure I did. He was smart. And he was a hard worker. But on Sunday, they didn't work, you see. They did their chores, and then in the afternoon, they go out somewhere and go around. Somebody was always coming to talk with him. They wanted to talk to him about their problems. They wanted to talk to him about everything. He was he was sort of father confessor to a big community, a country community.
Yeah.
He was a valuable man.
Gee whiz.
Much smarter man than his son.
Well.
Now, my father was the first man in our community, just to give you one instance, who ever conceived the idea of improving his corn crop.
Oh, really?
He said one time we were working in corn.
I'm a great nibbler.
He said, now, notice how many of this in here have two ears of corn to the stalk instead of one. He said, let's go through and take our seed corn for next year off those two ears. We did. Well, I guess next year around 50% of our corn had two ears to the stalk instead of one.
Oh, really?
Well, he told other people around, and some of them took it and some of them didn't. But he was smart like that. He was clever.
You took a hand in growing corn for a while?
Well, I worked until I worked on the farm until I went, after I went to the university.
How old were you then?
Huh? I was 20, he was 21.
When you went to the university?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
In the community where I grew up, we had 4 months school during a year.
Yeah.
That was all. When I got through there, I went to high school. And when I first started high school, I had to come home and help work on the farm in the spring.
Yeah.
And I did on the weekends, and at night I carried on my high school work and went back and took my examinations at the end of the school. You couldn't do that now, but you could then.
Yeah.
You got to put in a certain number of hours, huh? You know, you got to punch the clock.
You got to punch the clock.
I did my work on the farm too. Went back and took my examinations, made my grade. And next fall, I go back and do the same thing. And that was the way I got through high school. And I was 20 when I got through high school.
Well, with that system, you...
Before I was 21, I went to college.
Well, with that system, you had almost learned how to use a book.
Yeah.
With that system...
Yeah.
Well, you're not up there just reciting all the time.
No, I was doing it. I was on my own. I got the assignments, of course. People told me what to study. I read Latin by myself. I did mathematics by myself. I read history by myself.
Well, I'll be damned.
I usually went home the end of March, in the middle of March, you see. It was April, and about 2 months, you see, I was on my own.
Yeah.
I know how to work, Guy. I worked on a farm as a farm hand as a boy all my life, from the time I was knee-high to a duck.
Well, fire, Roscoe, when I first knew you, you worked out there in that garden.
I did. I still do.
You had a garden.
I did.
I don't mean it was just a little pussyfoot of a garden. Yeah. I mean...
I have a substitute garden now, but...
You don't have to have a big plot to have a garden, you know. Will just work the pants off of you, won't it?
I made a new one this winter.
I had forgotten that garden. You had roses?
Yeah.
And you had onions?
I had asparagus.
Yes.
I don't try roses anymore. They don't grow on the beach very well. They're very difficult. But I do grow, let's see what I grow. Oh, I grow endive for the soup. And
yeah, because you can't buy it.
Little onions, things that you can't buy fresh, you know.
Yeah.
By the time you get them down there, they're stale.
Yeah.
And I have a good time with it.
Endive, what else?
Oh, cabbage and okra and tomatoes and...
Well, let me tell you, Roscoe, that cabbage, fresh...
Is good.
Is entirely different.
Oh, I can't eat the other stuff.
From that other stuff.
But the fresh I never have any trouble with.
It's just like another vegetable, ain't it?
Absolutely. And I get it before it gets headed and white, you see, when it's still green and tender. And I never have any trouble with it.
All this country, you see, used to be solid cabbage or solid lettuce.
Well,
that was in the vegetable days. And then all the vegetable farmers went broke and they put it in grass for cattle.
Yeah.
Well, I somehow got the idea that the only influence you had when you were growing up, you lived in a kind of a desert, was Greeno. And I figured he was the one that you wrote your thesis for him.
Greenlaw.
Greenlaw.
Yeah. I wrote the first thesis with him, you know. He came to the university after I went to did. He came on about my sophomore, junior year there, I think.
Oh.
Junior year.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And taught Shakespeare and Spencer.
Yeah, think of that.
He was one of the great Spencerians. He,
oh.
He did and supervised the edition of the Variorum Spencer, which is eight or ten volumes. That was after he went to Johns Hopkins.
Yeah.
I did most of my graduate work in his study. Because he had a better Spencer library than the university did.
Well, what? You didn't work in Spencer?
Yeah, my master's thesis was on Spencer.
Well, let me tell you, Roscoe, I have never seen any earmarks of Spencer about you.
No, I still like Reed Spencer.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these
I don't agree with a lot of the interpretations, but then I don't agree with a lot of the interpretations of other things, too.
Yeah?
I still like it.
Well, I don't see any influence of Spencer on you. You don't act like you'd ever been exposed to Spencer.
Well, I
think of the Spencer people. Now I've just known a very few, but I think of them as sort of as the elite.
Sort of what?
As the elite. If they can get into Spencer, if they can get into him, you see, they amongst the elite, amongst the scholars, in my view. A lot hard. It's not the same thing as doing Shakespeare. Anybody can do Shakespeare.
Well, Spencer's more difficult than Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if he was as smart as Shakespeare or as good a writer. I don't think he was in many respects. But he had the ability to fuse his religious and political life with his imaginative, poetic imagination.
Yeah.
Even, I think, to a greater extent in many ways than Shakespeare did.
Yeah.
Shakespeare took it more simply.
Yeah.
Spencer is one of the most complicated people to read.
Yeah.
And I have combed him with a fine-tooth comb.
Is that right?
I got started when I was with Greenlaw on studying Spencer's use of earlier language, which he did a great deal of. And that was what I did for my thesis. But now, Greenlaw wasn't that sort. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
But he was a very practical businessman.
Is that right?
One of his brothers was... Well, very wealthy businessman. And Greenlaw was...
He came
out very well. He made a lot of money on textbooks and editions and things of that sort. But he had a grasp of business and politics and social life that very few college professors have.
So you learned from him. Did you learn then or later?
Well, I've been at it ever since. He was a Baconian, Green, that's the best way to describe it. I remember Bacon was always insisting on the value of experience in learning. Now, Greenlaw was a Baconian, and Bacon was, in spite of his agnewistic behavior at times, he was a man who had experience himself, and had great regard for it, very high regard. Well,
yeah, he talks about it, but I had never, you see, I'm such a shallow water man in that whole area from 1660 back, is I don't have your feel for it. I don't have the grounding for it. And you see, the substance of it I miss.
Now, well, I got a great deal from Greenlaw.
Yeah. Now, you see, what Bacon says about experience, I would just think, well, that's a mental thing with him.
No, it isn't. It was observation.
Yeah.
And the experience of his own, of course, but
yeah.
He was a very close observer and a keen mind, and Greenlaw loved him, and he knew him backwards and forwards, as he did Spencer and Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Those three people were his life, practically.
Yes.
Well, he started out with a little Chaucer, selection from Chaucer. That was the first thing he ever edited, I think. And he became a good editor, and he got together. You probably had when you were in high school a literature book called Literature and Life.
Yes.
He did that.
Is that right?
He got together a group of high school teachers, and he directed them. They made the selections with his assistance, and they worked on it together. He was final editor, of course, and
yeah.
He passed on everything. But
yeah.
Boy, he got rich off that.
That was
like the Hodges Handbook, so far as popularity was concerned.
Yeah,
it was in California.
But now, all that time, how long was that after he came to Chapel Hill?
Oh, he started on it very soon afterwards.
Yeah.
That time he was working on Spencer book.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Guy, you couldn't just turn 5 minutes of Miss Daisy on before they leave, could you?
Miss Daisy?
Uh-huh. Just let them listen to that.
Let me tell you, Faye, I don't have any of those things.
Okay.
Debbie's got them all up there cataloging them.
I see. Okay. I just won.
I haven't taped since August 1971. I quit.
Uh-huh. Oh.
I quit taping. I had more. I didn't. The reason I taped was to learn. My faculties weren't good enough just to learn all direct, and with the tape, see,
too
I could hold.
It's too bad he's so dumb.
I could hold it still, you see, and play it over and over again.
Yeah.
And that's the way. But that
he isn't as dumb as he pretends to be, is he?
Since then, we just use a typewriter and never even make cassettes.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Time for dinner.
Yes. I know that.
You've got to have some lunch. Why don't you just eat lunch here?
No,
we don't have it. Don't need any lunch. We've had lunch.
Yeah.
I've got cottage cheese and peaches and pears.
We've had lunch. Thank you.
And a glass of milk.
We've had lunch. Thank you.
No, I think not, Faye. We've talked.
Thank you ever so much.
He'd still be talking. We'd never get away.
We could
get started. We just go on and on and on, you know. We like
give us just a little cottage cheese so they go.
No, we really do have to go on.
We got to go.
I don't, he'd hurry.
Well, now, let me tell you, Roscoe, you see what we've been talking about. There's nothing private about it.
No.
But nobody knows that about you, damn your hide. I don't even know it as much as I know about you.
Why should I go around telling everybody all my experience? Nobody's interested.
They couldn't, can be, because they don't know it.
Well.
You don't have to.
Should I write a book?
Yeah. Oh, hell no, you can't put that in a book. You can't. There's some things a book just won't do.
Should I go around telling people I don't know how to cuss a mule?
Well, let me tell you. Nothing pleases me like a little cussing. I don't hear it anymore, but
it helps.
I'm like Mark Twain in profanity.
It helps now and then.
It's a shame the school people.
My father was expert at it.
Some kind of a nursing
home,
a civic organization.
When he got 20,
but
turned
what
loose,
is it
the air
she's
was blue.
Doing? It's her, yeah, that's her civic duty.
Let me tell you what happened.
I
want to tell you that profanity. What happens? You see, he just said he just said that his daddy was an expert at it.
His daddy was a peach.
When things happened, the air was blue, he said.
She was his favorite child.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
She and daddy used to be great chums.
You
see, I went down to the farm and stayed for a little while when he first went abroad.
Yeah.
And the only time I was happy was when I was with Daddy Parker, and I used to follow him around.
Yeah.
Wherever he was working.
A lot of other people did, too.
Yeah.
Well,
he was a peach, though. He really was.
There's people that I know now who have had such extraordinarily picturesque language in their time, and they deny it. They renounce it.
Oh, no. They've lost a lot of flavor, haven't they?
Oh, they have. And you see, they won't even admit ever having known that.
Oh,
the only scholar I ever knew who was expert at that was the Shakespearean Shirley Graves, who taught at Trinity College at Durham before it became Duke University, and then he went over to the University of North Carolina and got pneumonia and died when he was still a young man. But I was in the same regiment with Shirley in World War I. He was a lieutenant and I was a captain. We weren't in the same company, but he was in a different battalion. And I'll tell you this one story and then I'll go. We were part of Depot Brigade and sent all of our soldiers out as soon as they got so they could march and carry a gun to other divisions. And we got low in troops, and the old man thought that we had to have something to do, so he started regimental schools. And we had regimental school, military, of course, and finally had examinations, and the 1st Battalion graded the 3rd Battalion papers, and the 3rd Battalion graded the 2nd, and so on, so the battalion commander didn't grade the papers. Well, our battalion commander was a railroad builder, superintendent, he wasn't illiterate, practically. Shirley Graves was a brilliant Shakespearean. And after the examination, I was going across the regimental grounds one night, and I heard this blue streak of profanity coming out of one of the barracks. I knew where it was coming from, so I turned in, went down through the barracks to Shirley's room. I said, "What the hell's the matter with you, Shirley?" "Why," he said, "here am I. And it's a goddamn RA. Supposed to be an educated man. I have a PhD. I teach in a university. I get in this blankety blank army. They send me to school. I take an examination. My paper is graded by a goddamn section hand, and he flunked me."
Oh,
I thought that was perfect. I see you. Come see me sometime.
I've got a
loaf
of bread to give you.
Time went right around 1600, and the end of the visit with Roscoe and Catherine. The very first time, this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 73. Channel went right around 1600, and the end of the visit with Roscoe and Catherine this Tuesday morning, the 23rd of October, 73. Channel 1 right around 1600, and the individual with Roscoe and Catherine, the very first time, this Tuesday, the 23rd of October, 73.